think what our passage says today is that at best, battle council is not going to work. At best, it's not going to work. And actually, at worst, it's going to make fighting sin, growing as a Christian, even harder. In other words, battle council is not just awkward and embarrassing, it's doomed to failure as well. Now, I think that's what our passage says. If I'm right, actually, it poses some quite serious questions about all the other ways, the more normal ways, that we go about wanting to grow as Christians. The plans we put in place, the things we ask for prayer for. I think it poses some serious challenges to the way we go about that. So it's going to take a bit of concentration. We're going to try and get into this short passage and see how it makes that point. By the way, I'm not assuming everyone here is a Christian. If you're not, you're probably assuming we're all a bunch of nutters, at least the person at the front is. You're kind of right, but like I said a bit before, being Christian has never been cool. It's about whether it's true and whether it's good. And I see it, a lot of people today, they're actually just scared. They're scared of whether Christianity is true or not. And they may say it's nonsense, but whether they've actually given it a chance, not often. It's running away. Anyway, let's get into our passage then. Romans chapter 7. And the key verse is verse 4. Verse 4. So, my brothers and sisters, you also died to the law through the body of Christ, that you might belong to another, to him who was raised from the dead, in order that we might bear fruit for God. It's a pretty dense verse. But the key is that something has happened to Christians. They have died to the law, and now they belong to the one who was raised from the dead. That's Jesus, if you were wondering. And now they can bear fruit for God. And what Paul is doing is he's comparing life under the law, or we might say the Old Testament, life under the Old Testament, to life under Jesus, or life under the New Testament. And he's doing that because the Roman Christians are an interesting bunch who were basically embarrassed by the New Testament, you might say. Now, that might surprise us, because if anything, we Christians today are more embarrassed by the Old Testament, right? These strange rules like don't eat prawns and really distant stories about the people of Israel, that's the stuff that embarrasses us, not the New Testament, the bit about Jesus. But the Romans were the opposite. They got the Old Testament. They got the fact that God had revealed his laws and worked in this people. And then Jesus comes along, and it's a bit awkward because the Old Testament then becomes old when Jesus comes along. And that provokes some questions, such as, well, what was the point of the Old Testament if in the end God was going to kind of get rid of it and move on to the new? Why not just start with Jesus? And don't we need laws like this in the Old Testament to live good lives? Surely God can't change his laws. In fact, if the laws are gone, does it really matter how we live at all? These are the kind of questions that they were asking as they were thinking, oh, it's a bit awkward, this New Testament stuff. And throughout the letter from Paul to these Christians that are in Rome, Paul is trying to help them, these slightly embarrassed Christians, see how great the New Testament is, how great Jesus is. And it's a good letter for us because of how many of us are a bit embarrassed of the Old Testament and then also the New Testament as well. So we're a bit embarrassed about it all. But Paul says we don't need to be ashamed of the gospel. So far in the gospel, I think we've had two big steps. Hopefully you can see the screen. Oh, that's not on there. The two big steps are these. The law, one, cannot save you. Oh, I was going to give you a... That's the comparison that's being drawn. One, the law cannot save you. Only Jesus can. That's kind of chapters 1 to 5. And then in chapter 6, the law fights sin. Yes, the law does fight sin, but Jesus does too. There's this question in chapter 6 about, well, if we get rid of the Old Testament, do we just stop caring about sin? And Paul says, no, we do. We care. Now, the third step in chapter 7 is quite a key step. And it's that the law cannot beat sin. So the law might want to fight sin. If you live under the Old Testament, you might want to fight sin, but you cannot beat sin. But Jesus can. It's the step that chapter 7 makes. And you can see it in verse 4, this idea of now we can bear fruit for God. In the Old Testament, in the rules, they might have been good laws, but they weren't going to actually change you. They weren't going to actually make you bear fruit for God. So in the rest of the time, I want to compare these Old Testament rules, the law, to the new. And I think we'll see, and this is where I come back to where we started, I think we see that a lot of our plans, and Battle Council being one of the more embarrassing versions of them, a lot of our plans as Christians just fall into that law side, that law path, which, yes, it might try and fight sin, but it cannot beat sin. So, let's carry on into the rest of these verses and see this comparison being drawn. Verses 1 to 3, Paul draws a simple illustration. And the simple illustration is to make the point that we're really not under the old anymore, but we're under the new. And he uses a picture of marriage. We were once married to the law, but marriages end at death. Simple point, if you die, marriage is over. And when Jesus died, we died too. That relationship to the law is now over. Simple comparison, but actually it shows a very important difference between the old path and the new path. And it is that the old path, might describe it like this. You're married to some rules. Now, many of you will know your testament well. There's a lot of rules in the Old Testament, a lot of things you have to do. And you are married to them, to put it that way. And there is this tick list set of rules that you have to do. Some of them are very particular, like not eating prawns, giving 10% of your income. Some of them are a bit more general. Don't murder. Don't covet. Rules which you can tick off. But the difference when you move to the New Testament is this. You're in a relationship. Your rules, the law, gets exchanged for a person. You see that, verse 1 to 3? You're married to the law. Now we're married to Jesus. The difference now gets bigger in verse 5. Let me read verse 5. For when we were in the realm of the flesh, the sinful passions aroused by the law were at work in us, so that we bore fruit for death. Under the law, we have tick list rules. And maybe the simplest way to summarize them is that we just don't want to keep them. You've got all these rules, but actually, we don't want to keep them. He uses language of being in the realm of the flesh, and the sinful passions are aroused by the law. That is, the law comes down, we hear these rules, and just within us, the flesh, we might say, our bodies, our minds, we don't want to keep them. Now, he's going to explain a bit more about this in the next passage of Romans, so we won't go into detail now, but the point is simple. The law won't ultimately work because we don't actually want to keep the laws. And can you think about it like this? Let's say you have these tick list rules. Now, either you keep the rules, but you don't want to, or you never keep them at all. They're your two options. Now, neither are actually very good. If you never keep them at all, there's all these rules that you're failing at. But if you do keep them, let me ask you, is that really godliness? Living a good life on the outside, which you don't really want to do. You're kind of just forcing yourself to do it. Do you see the problem? The law might tell you what to do, tell you the right things to do, but if you don't want to do it, it's not really changing you. And that's the problem with something like Battle Council. You've got all these rules, which maybe you could force yourself to keep these rules through various motivations. Guilt. I have to do it. Jesus loves me, I really should do it. Or fear, if I don't keep these rules, maybe God will chuck me out of the club. But it's not the real deal, is it? It's not real change. Now, with the law, it's not that you kind of don't care about sin at all. You do, but it's just not as real. Think of addictions or relationships or behaviors that you know are messing your life up. There's a part of you that wants to get rid of them. But it's different to dislike the kind of consequences of your actions to actually not wanting them at all. Think of young blokes, or it's not just young blokes, that look at pornography. They do it because they want to, ultimately. Think of when we explode with anger in our relationships. Part of us doesn't want to do that, do we? But we do it because we want to. We don't actually want the opposite. And that's this thing about this old path, that you just get rules, you just get laws, tick lists. It doesn't really change you. Even if you did keep them, it wouldn't be real. It wouldn't be godliness. Now, the new path gives us something very different. And it's what we see in verse 6. The tick list rules, which we don't want to keep, is replaced with a relationship which we love above everything else. Verse 6. But now, by dying to what once bound us, that's the law, we've been released from the law so that we serve in the new way of the Spirit and not in the old way of the written code. Now, this shift of language to the Spirit is catching something really pivotal. We're getting it here, how the gospel changes us. I think in a romantic relationship, how our heart is at work, right? We want that relationship. We want time together with that person. We think about them. It's not that we know we should like them, and so we'll tell ourselves to be nice and kind of spend time with them. It's not how relationships work, is it? It's deep. And that is real godliness. That's what happens, not in the realm of the flesh, with just the things we want, but in the realm of the Spirit. When we become believers in Jesus, it's not that we get a supernatural power inside us by the Spirit. Oh, the Spirit's inside me. It's far more that Jesus takes his place in our heart. Jesus comes to live within us. And that starts to take over in a way that a romantic relationship can take over our mind and energies and emotions. Do you see the difference? Rules, which we don't really want to keep, but maybe I'll find a way to stop that. A relationship, which actually, yeah, I really care about this relationship. This is the thing that I want. This is the difference that the old gets to the new. So now we don't just say, no, stop it to our old desires. We say, I want something bigger. I want something better. I really want this relationship, and it's changing me in the way that relationships can. When it comes with Jesus, we say, I want to be like him. I want to treat others like he treats me. I don't want that buzz from just being popular or getting my emotions fixed or sex fixed, whatever, you know. Our heart is on something else. And it's not that we're talking about being married to Jesus. It's an instant turn-off in some ways, isn't it? Being romantic. We're not talking about romantically loving Jesus. It's beyond that. For many of us, romantic love is the kind of the height, right? But Christians, we say there's something beyond that. And it's a bit like maybe when parents get a taste of love for their children. It's very, very deep. It's not romantic, but it's very deep. But it's even beyond that as well. It's the love of knowing the one who made you. Knowing that is such a deep thing about us. Where we come from, where we truly belong. And when we get it, it's that deep security of who I am and where I'm going where my home is. That's the love we're talking about here. And it's why guilt and fear, like we might have in the law kind of path, it's not what the news about. Because it's a relationship that motivates us, love. And Battle Council, I think at the heart of it, and it is stupid because it's not about a relationship. If I said to you that I chatted with my wife last week and I had a conversation with her and I said to her, darling, I've got a plan. I've got a plan to love you. At 6:30 every morning, I'm going to get up and I'm going to brush my teeth and give you a kiss on the cheek. Then, 6:45, I'll get you a cup of coffee. I'll bring it up on the dot. I know you don't like tea. I'll bring that up to you. I'll help get the kids ready. Then, in the evening, when back from work and stuff like that, I think we'll have maybe 8 to 10 minutes of chat about our day. You know, a bit, but not too much. And then we'll sit on the sofa after the kids have gone down. We might hold hands for a bit. 6, 7 minutes. Now, at some point along this line, you're thinking, this is not a relationship. This is just weird. But isn't that so much of what we do with God? We come with plans. We come with rules and lists. And we think, is that actually how I treat a person? No. And so much of Battle Council is a bad example in one sense because it's so extremely bad. But so much of our plans to become Christians just fall into this kind of tick list rules kind of edge. I want to grow as a Christian, dot, 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 dot. And there is a way of saying that. I want to grow as a Christian and writing that down. But there's a way of doing that as a part of a relationship, and there's a way of doing it as a part of a tick list rules, as part of a club, isn't there? And I think we know the difference. We know when we're actually spending time with someone. Maybe the one rule, if you like, for a relationship with God is spending time with God each day. That's how relationships work. Maybe sometimes as we spend time with God, we'll all make some more particular plans, but we'll do it together. Not me telling God, but actually as a relationship. And the truth is, the more we spend time with Jesus, the more we actually get to know him. The more we spend time is the more we actually start to love that relationship, the more it actually becomes the thing we love above everything else. And in one sense, when you, young Christian, you become a Christian or something like that, it's not realistic to think that straight away you're going to actually realize how great this relationship is and how great Jesus is. You're going to have to get to know him. But the more you do get to know him, the more it actually does take over your heart. With romantic relationships, we always fear that if we get to know someone a bit too much, we'll actually realize they're a real rotter and they're not trustworthy. Actually, with Jesus, it's the other way around. We get to love him more and more and more, and that is the Spirit taking over our hearts. Now, I think I'm running out of time, but I hope this gets you thinking about what the real Christian life actually is. How easy we turn it into a kind of self-improvement, tick list, pursuit of faith kind of thing, when actually it is a relationship, and it's about our desires. Do I want this? Do I actually want the life that Jesus says to me is good for me? If I don't, then the thing I need to do is I need to talk to Jesus about it and maybe get to know him more and give it a chance. And that is how we will actually bear fruit. I'm not saying it's easy. Spend time with Jesus and you'll be fine. But it is much better, and it is the only path that works, rather than these tick list rules that we come up with. I think we'll end with some silence, and it's just a chance for you to actually talk to God yourself, talk to Jesus. Because that seems to be the right thing now, given what we've said. So have a bit of silence, and then we will turn to pray a bit more.